Perfect. I'm going to call to order a special meeting of the City of Grover Beach City Council for Monday, June 8, 2015. Roll call.
For the record, Councilmember Bright, absent. For the record, Councilmember Nichols, absent. Councilmember Shaw?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Lee?
Here.
Mayor Schultz?
Here. Thank you, Chanel. Would you all please rise with me for the flag salute?
Please follow me, hands over your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. Okay. Public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period of time not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item in the jurisdiction of this council. Please be aware the council will listen to all communications, however, in compliance with the Brown Act. We cannot take any action on any items not on the agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address the council during public communications tonight?
Good evening, Brad Snook, co-chair of our county's chapter of Surfrider Foundation. A couple issues I'd like to bring to the council's attention as we talk about water tonight, later on the agenda. Some of the storm runoff characteristics of what people can do to redesign their gardens have also kind of been left behind as people focus more on conservation. So at Pismo Beach's meeting, city council meeting last week, our Ocean Friendly Gardens coordinator, Robert Nieto, gave a presentation to the council about 10 minutes long and went over what Ocean Friendly Gardens are, the characteristics of Ocean Friendly Gardens. We also asked the council to help set aside money for training, either for public or for professionals in the community so that they learn how to make gardens more ocean-friendly. And I think it's an investment not only in the professionals that are here, but the professionals of the future, and certainly in the landscapes that will live on in the community for the future. So while people are changing over their gardens right now, might as well do it the right way. And so I ask the council to consider giving Rob, 10 minutes to meet the council and also share with the community some of the good things about ocean-friendly gardens. Also, I've been asked to bring to the council's attention a polystyrene ban for the city. Don't know if your IWMA representative is here tonight, but perhaps we don't have the votes on the IWMA, so what we like to do is consider one community at a time. Slow unanimously approved the polystyrene ban last week, and it was my pleasure to be there in front of the council to give some testimony for Surfrider, and it will have a positive impact on our watersheds, our beaches, our wildlife, and our community. So also ask the council to consider that, and I'll make myself available if you need any further resources. First and foremost, I suggest that you ask the staff up there at San Luis Obispo because they did an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. And can you make sure that Mr. Perrott has Mr. Nieto's contact information? Very good. Is there anyone else? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. My name is Ken Lehman, and last time that we talked, I asked the city manager if someone could go down to the state park, I think if you remember. It's where the sewage, where they take their dump, the people from the valley or whoever comes and takes their fifth wheels. And I do have pictures. I was told I did make a mistake on the road, so it wasn't financed by our new bond issue. It was the state. I did a little research, so my apologies on that. But I would like to point out that still we are using water, free drinking water. I have the sign. I turned on the taps down by the state park. And If anybody watched the PBS special recently, we've got severe problems. If we don't have a rain next year, we're going to be like the valley. Our groundwater is going to be terrible. And like the Surf Rider Foundation said, we're going to have some saltwater intrusion, and we're going to really be hurting. So I wish someone would just go down there and find out what's going on. I didn't get any feedback yet. And there's a lot of water using. During the middle of the day, I saw people turning it on and filling it up. So someone needs to look into that, have a meter on it. And they only pay $10 to go down that beach to sleep. And I went down to the clerk's office about the roads. You're right, you won by 2%. I wasn't for that. I thought there would be another way that we could get the money, because I am retired, and a lot of people don't have the money. We got the Cuesta, we got the roads, we got maybe the increase of water. Yes, we have some things to address here in Grover Beach, and I hope that we do, and do it very responsible. And by the way, I'm late today because I'm putting rocks in my front yard. It's dead. I'm doing my part, and a little lady down the street walks over, and she says to me that I told her how much I use. I can't believe how much she doesn't use. So people are doing better than me. Some are doing not as good as me. But we need to take this serious, because if we don't get rain. Okay? Thank you. Thank you for your
Thank
time.
Thank you, Mr. Lehman.
Okay.
Is there anyone else?
Can I have somebody read this for me?
Yeah. So
I'm not a kid anymore. I'm still working.
Just Mr. Weisson, this is relative to the water. Would you prefer to hear it now?
Oh, to the water discussion?
Yes.
Yeah, why don't we do that? We'll hold it, and then when we get to that discussion. Are you okay with that, John?
I don't care.
Okay.
I just want to be known.
Yes, sir.
On record.
Okay. You will be on record.
You know, I'm not going to suffer and build two motels. I've been here 58 years. I didn't come here for that. I didn't serve my country for that.
Okay, seeing no one else come forward, I'm going to close public communications. And let's move on to our consent agenda tonight. And this is, let's see, there's one item on consent. This is approval of final track map, track 3038, phase 2. Does any member of the council want to pull this item from consent? No? Okay.
I'll make a motion that we move staff's recommendation on the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second to approve resolution authorizing the city to recover the final map for track 3038 phase 2, rejecting all offers of dedication identified on the map without prejudice, and accepting the bond and the securities provided to guarantee completeness of all public improvements. So if there is no additional discussion on that motion, this is a roll call vote.
Mayor Pro Tem Meade?
Yes.
Yes.
For the record, Councilmember Bright, absent. For the record, Councilmember Nichols, absent. Mayor Sharp.
Yes. Motion carries 3-0. Thank you. All right, moving on to our business. This is item number 2, and this is a status report on water sources and conservation efforts. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. This was an item that the council had requested to be brought back to you. It's got actually two parts to the staff report. The first will deal with a review of water source and supply as a matter of updating the council. And then we'll cover the conservation efforts and where we sit with those, as well as outlining some options for council consideration. And unless the council has any questions of me, I'd like to ask the Public Works Director to proceed with the presentation.
Any questions of City Manager? Okay, Mr. Ray, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Wow, that's loud. I'll move away a bit here. So hopefully you can see the slides on the wall behind me, and I will march through this expeditiously. So first of all, as City Manager mentioned, the focus of the presentation is on water supply status and on the conservation program status. And so as some background, in 2015, the city water use, and that's in the water year, which ends in March of 2015, we consumed 60% of our contractual allocation, that being our contract with the county for Lopez water and our adjudicated allotment of water from the groundwater. Our total contractual allocation is 2,207 acre feet. We used 1,279. We used 33% of our groundwater allocation and 102% of our Lopez Lake allocation. That might bring question to you. We had surplus water available at the beginning of the water year, so in addition to our allocation. In 2014, Council enacted the Stage 3 water shortage condition, and that Stage 3 enacted a mandatory 10% water use reduction, and that included prohibitions against wasting water. City of Grover Beach has two sources of supply. We have 800 acre feet per year from Lopez Lake, our contract allocation, and 1,407 acre feet from groundwater, and that's our allocation per adjudication, for a total of 2,207 acre feet per year. Plus, we have 387 acre feet of emergency carryover water stored in Lopez Lake, and that is a result of the county's declaration of a water emergency. The city's supply is sufficient for anticipated maximum population of approximately 15,000. That's the anticipated build-out population. However, the current drought may reduce supply and cause short-term supply deficiencies. So let's look at the effects of drought on the groundwater basin. So rainfall has been below average for 4 years. The average is just 20 inches per year. And the groundwater pumping in the basin in 2014 was at 42% of safe yield. And that's basin-wide, just 42% of its safe yield. But the basin water levels continue to drop. And so that's the indicator right there that you're in a severe drought. And unfortunately, some areas have been indicated to be below sea level. There is a significant threat of seawater intrusion. The well levels are below the critical level, or have been below the critical level for 18 of 21 months, ending in December of 2014. And this threat of seawater intrusion is exacerbated by overpumping in the Napomo Mesa area. I will note that the NCMA annual report has been included electronically as a component of your staff report and is also available on the city's website, and is also available at the public service counter for review, and that includes technical details relative to the threat of seawater intrusion. The drought has also affected the Lopez Lake Reservoir. The lake level is at just over 18,000 acre feet, or 37% full. County enacted the Low Reservoir Response Plan, and that includes reductions in water delivery based on lake level. The advisory committee, subsequent to that, approved a 10% reduction in April. That's a 10% reduction in water deliveries to the agencies. And that could be reduced by as much as 20% in early October, or as early as October, I should say. And without significant rainfall, deliveries from the Lopez project could be reduced by 35% in the 2016-17 water year. This is what at least a component of the Low Reservoir Response Plan looks like. You see lake levels on the left, 20,000, 15,000, 10, 5, and 4,000 acre feet is considered minimum pool, wherein we would have to come up with some alternate method of drawing water from the reservoir. And as I mentioned earlier, we're at 18,000, so we're in that range between the 0 and 10% municipal delivery reduction. This is a potentially severe water shortage that we're in. Lopez Lake delivery reductions could increase demand on groundwater. And I'm referencing really all the agencies that rely on both Lopez water as well as groundwater in our area. And that increased demand on groundwater could also increase the threat of saltwater intrusion. So it's something we need to pay very close attention to. Current conditions suggest implementation of a stage 4 water shortage condition. And that would be here at the city of Grover Beach. So we're currently in a stage 3. And if you look at the water shortage contingency plan, the indications are there that we would be recommending a stage 4, which includes 25% mandatory consumption reductions. Looked at some water shortage scenarios to give council some idea of the current situation. So the good news is in 2015, the city's demand was just 76 gallons per capita per day. So each person each day has been, on average, has been using about 76 gallons of water. And that's really fascinating in comparison. Looking at the entire list in California, I was going over it today, there are some cities in California where it's up in the 400s. So we're in the top 18, I believe, of the state, which is fantastic. However, based on the current trend, and I mean city water use as well as the drought continuing, but also because the city has the emergency water and storage that I mentioned earlier, in 2015 and 2016, even with a Lopez reduction of 10%, we could expect our supply to easily supply 76 gallons per capita per day, so we should be fine. In 2016 and 17, it's anticipated as much as a 35% reduction, and again, we should be fine with being able to provide 76 gallons per capita per day. What could get interesting, however, is if any of the wells or all the wells were affected by saltwater intrusion or seawater intrusion. And so if we took the 2016-2017 reduction of 35% of Lopez deliveries and assumed that the wells were affected by saltwater intrusion and were unusable, we would only be able to deliver 61 gallons per person per day, which is a 20% reduction in our current water usage. So that is significant. So again, the threat of saltwater intrusion is real, and we need to be very careful about groundwater pumping. Let's look at now at water conservation. The stage 3 water shortage condition that we're in now includes a mandatory 10% consumption reduction, and it also includes a list of water use prohibitions. I'll just run over them very quickly. It's prohibited to use potable water for street cleaning. Unauthorized use of water from any fire hydrant is prohibited. Use of potable water to wash sidewalks and roadways is essentially prohibited. Use of potable water for construction purposes, such as consolidation of backfill, is prohibited unless no other source or method can be used. It's a pretty good list. Restaurant, it's prohibited to serve water to patrons in restaurants unless they request it. Hydrant flushing is prohibited except where required for public health. It's prohibited to refill existing private pools except to maintain water levels. And it's prohibited to use potable water for planting of turf and other new landscaping in unless it consists of drought-tolerant planting. And there's a couple more. Use of water for washing cars without a quick-acting shutoff nozzle and operation of any ornamental fountain or car wash unless the water is recirculated. Looking at the stage 3 water shortage condition and how it's been implemented by your staff, it has been applied evenly to the city itself, to businesses in the city, and to residences in the city. So all water customers, including ourselves, have been treated evenly. Under a failure to reduce the 10%, you receive a first notice, a courtesy notice. 2 months later, because our water billing is bimonthly, 2 months later, if you continue to fail to meet the conservation requirement, you receive a second notice, which is a warning notice. And 2 months later, again, if you continue to fail to meet the water conservation requirement, you receive a third notice. And that third notice is a penalty notice and notifies you that you would be receiving a 100% increase in the consumption charge only of your bill. So there are other charges on the bill, such as Lopez bond repayments and sewer charges. Those are not affected. And then 2 months later, if a person or business were to continue to fail to meet the requirement, the penalty would increase to 200% of the consumption charge, and then again 2 months later, to 300% of the consumption charge. So all in all, if you were to reach 300%, you would have failed for 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 months. Basically an entire year you would have either been unable to or would have ignored, had to ignore the 10% reduction requirement. Continuing with implementation, since August of 2014, only 2.4% of the city's water customers have received a first penalty, and only 0.8% have received a second penalty, and only 0.2% have received a third penalty. The numbers are tiny. So the great news is basically 97% compliance with the program. The city has also tried to assist the water customers with the incentive programs. Includes the Cash for Grass program, the washing machine retrofit program, and the toilet retrofit program. And I will mention that those programs have been immensely successful. I'm hitting the wrong button. Here we go. And it jumped. I apologize. Let me just... There we go. So the program has been extremely successful. Again, the city has achieved an 18% consumption reduction. Again, that puts us, in the top, one of the top cities in the state as far as low water usage. And again, we have 97.6% compliance. And the other good news is that the city may already be in compliance with the governor's executive order, which requires an 8% reduction requirement as compared to 2013. So, I was at a water meeting today, and we were the stars, literally, of the meeting, and I can't take credit for that. It was a council decision, but I think it's great to know that we're being recognized as having a great program. There are challenges, however, with the Stage 3 water shortage condition implementation. With regard to businesses, if there is an increase in business or a change in the occupancy of a business suite or business property, it is difficult to compare to a previous number. In our case, 2014 is the comparison year. With apartment buildings, the regular changes in occupancy create a challenge, again, in trying to compare to a base year. And then with regard to apartment buildings, a number of apartment building managers have noted that they don't have or typically don't have sub-meters, so they're unable to determine which department isn't or which apartment isn't conserving water, so they don't know specifically who to talk to. Although the program has been incredibly successful, and I'm not sure I could recommend changes, looking at some of the challenges that we've had and some of the complaints we've received, there are some options that council may wish to consider. Those would include a mandatory water conservation training for residents or businesses who might request a waiver from their penalty. That's a program that's in place in Santa Cruz. It's also a program that the city of Rio Grande is considering. We could establish a modified baseline water use for apartment buildings. And by that I mean we could track, there's not that many apartments in the city. We could attempt to track the occupancy and compare water use to occupancy and provide a baseline based on occupancy. An option would be to remove the mandatory conservation requirement for businesses if they were to submit a water conservation plan that detailed implementation of water conserving devices and practices to the maximum extent practicable. And that is similar to the program that the state is recommending under the governor's executive order. A fourth option would be consider changing the penalty to an administrative citation instead of ours that is a 100%, 200%, and then 300% of your consumption charge. We could use an administrative citation that had a set amount to begin with and then increased based on the number of violations up to some maximum limit. And a similar, that is already allowed for in your city municipal code and is used in our code enforcement program. And then noting that businesses account for about 18% of the annual water use, council could consider eliminating application of the reduction requirements to businesses. So in conclusion, I did note that the 2014 NCMA annual report is on the city's website, is at the customer counter, and is on file at the city. Although I didn't spend a lot of time on the report tonight, we are recommending that you receive and file the report. I would say that there's really no new news in the report other than the information I presented tonight, except there's a ton of technical detail if you're interested. And we're looking for council to provide direction to staff tonight regarding implementation of the Water Shortage Contingency Plan Penalty Program. And I'll leave you with that. I can bump to the slide that asks you for questions, but I think this is really the important slide. So with that, I'll conclude my presentation.
Great. Thank you, Greg. And let me just be clear on, I think you were talking about Grover Beach being the star at the water meeting you had today, and let's just be clear, council can't take credit for this either. I think it's basically the residents and the businesses who have taken this shortage very seriously and changed behavior. So I want to say thank you for acknowledging the council put together this plan, but it's really the people who live and work in this community who are the real stars in water conservation. So with that, let's see who's got questions. Marion, you have any questions?
Yeah, I have a couple. In talking about our sources of water, it seems like a lot of our water is coming from ground pumping, and we are worried about the saltwater intrusion factor. Are we right now using all the water we're allotted from Lopez Lake? And if not, why not, or what's the thought process there?
We are using, well, as in the one slide it indicated that we're using this year or in the previous water year ending in March, we used 102% of our Lopez allocation, which means we used the 800 acre feet per year, which is our standard contractual allocation, and we used a small amount of surplus water, which is also available for us.
And do we have more outstanding surplus water, or did we use... We're pretty much caught up.
We do. We have, as a result of the county's emergency declaration, it created an account of water. I believe the number is 280-something acre feet. Did I get that right? Thank you. 387, thank you, acre feet of water that we have available to use, to supplement, or to add to. However, I also note that we would have a delivery challenge related to that. We can currently deliver just over our allocation. We could probably deliver in the range of 50 acre feet in a year over our allocation. Without either an intertie or a pump station, we couldn't deliver more.
Okay. And the other question going along with that, I see in your report we have a third source of water, this agricultural land conversion. And I see we get 70, or I see we got 209. Are we using the maximum that we're allotted there?
That's just groundwater.
Okay.
What it is through prior to the adjudication in the basin, there was what was called a gentleman's agreement between the various cities here. It was an early groundwater management group where through the various agencies collaborated on management of our groundwater aquifer. There was an agreement made that suggested that if property was converted from agricultural use to residential use, there was a savings in the water amount used. Typical agricultural use here is very water intensive. And that savings generated an additional allocation of groundwater. So we're trying to not use groundwater to the extent possible. So.
All right. And... Yep, I think that was all the questions I had just about the report in general. I guess I would have more, you know, to comment on when we get to the how to carry things out. But as far as questions, that's all I had.
Very good. Jeff?
So thank you for that presentation, Greg. So I had a couple questions that kind of came up. So you had referenced in your staff report that there was a couple levels that well levels that were below sea level. So are those any of the Grover Beach wells, or those surrounding wells, or where are they?
They're not. The Grover Beach wells, although they've dropped significantly, are holding up relatively well. The depression that we're seeing that is at or below sea level tends to be oriented toward the farming agricultural areas, Oceano and South, and heading toward Napomo Mesa.
Okay. So one of the things that you represented was that obviously the city, as the mayor mentioned, is the city and the residents and the community are doing a great job of conserving. How are we as a city specifically doing? And is there more that we can do to conserve? I mean, it was mentioned that obviously we're one of the water users. So how are we doing, and what can we as a council do to implement our own strategies
The city water uses, which includes a handful of public buildings and then primarily city parks and some landscape areas throughout the city, we've reduced water significantly. We've stopped watering two parks in particular, the park located on Farrell Road and the Mentone Basin are both basically dry. A lot of the other basins that had some landscape watering along the tops, we've eliminated watering on those to the extent possible. We do attempt to water some of the plants just to make sure that we don't lose some of the larger ornamental plants. We are mostly complying with the requirement. Overall, we have a couple accounts where we haven't, and in particular, those would be some of the parks and landscape areas that we are trying to maintain. What could we do more? We have been working on, and we have a desperate need to continue to work on converting as much of our landscape areas as possible into drought-tolerant planting and more sparse planting. And we have also a desperate need to upgrade our irrigation systems and timers wherever possible so that they're more efficient. Unfortunately, that's another one of those projects where I have expertise and experience, but I don't have the time, and there aren't other staff members that have that expertise or experience. So we're looking at engaging a consulting firm to help us with that retrofit, at least on the design side. And then we're looking for options to use volunteer labor, and you know, CCCs has an option out there, as well as our inmate labor to help implement some of those changes. And some of that you'll see on the Oak Park and Long Branch medians is in it's in process now, although the process is slow.
So one of the bullet points was that the potable water is not to be used for construction unless there's no other source. So for our construction projects, is there another source locally? So that where the people can pull from a non-potable from effectively not our supply, since ours would all be potable?
Yeah, interesting. So there are a few private wells that would be considered, from the city's perspective, non-potable. A few ag wells located in town. Unfortunately, they do pull from the same aquifer. The city of Santa Maria has indicated that water could be available through the city of Santa Maria, but that was a while before the governor came out with the executive order mandating that agencies reduce water. Beyond that, we are, and I know the mayor can speak to this because he sits on the board, but we are encouraging the South County Sanitation District to consider making non-potable water available in some means for construction purposes where allowable by law.
Which actually leads a nice segue into my next question, where in the staff report it says staff will continue to pursue additional sources of supply. So in addition to reclaimed water, which obviously would be from the South Sand District, what other supply options do we have?
The primary supply options that are on the table right now for consideration, the city of Pismo Beach is moving forward with their wastewater reuse plan, and I think that's something that at some point the staff and council will need to contemplate what the city of Grover Beach's role might be in helping that be successful and in possibly partnering and obtaining some of that water. There are plans with the South County Sand District, obviously, as you mentioned. Another option that's been contemplated is a spillway raise at the Lopez Reservoir. And at least for permanent supplies of water, that's about all that's out there that's legitimately on the table and near term. Much more in the future would be to contemplate desalination. And then possibly as an emergency source of water, if necessary, to consider purchasing water from another agency, and that might even include state water, if possible.
Okay. So then going last question, and I realize some of these are not necessarily with regards to our own water conservation plan, but kind of a more general discussion. I'm not sure if that's where you're okay with me going. So tell me if I go too far afield here. You had mentioned the Lopez project, and for the record, I'll just say that I'm a county employee. Lopez does is some of the projects I work on. That's not going to affect a decision if we do get to that point later. So, but if I do get close, I will recuse myself. But it's not going to come to that.
Stay alert, city attorney.
Exactly. So that leads to my question of with regards to. Turnout capacity, effectively, you said our ability to take more than our allotment from Lopez would need to have an intertie or some other method. Is there options for that? Would there be an option for an additional Lopez turnout if properly located that could supply those additional waters into our system?
The options we're contemplating right now include an intertie with the city of Arroyo Grande, which is very viable, and that is included in your capital improvement plan for the upcoming year. That is one of the options included under that item in the capital improvement program. The other option would be construction of a pump station on our turnout. An additional turnout probably wouldn't make sense at this point, but so pumping or an intertie with the city of Arroyo Grande.
Okay, then thank you for that. One question with regards to possibly changing businesses into, I forget which slide it was, but one of the options was to either remove businesses from the program or reducing the reduction requirements to businesses. Would you consider apartments to be a business?
No.
Or would the city? Okay.
Not from the perspective, at least, not of my report.
And then just to confirm, as people are getting their notices, so it's the 2013 baseline that all of those notices.
14.
So you said 13 on the bills?
State. The state mandate is related to 2013,
right.
And ours relates to 2014.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, just by clarification, if I recall, when we put the contingency plan into place, we set that bar the year previous to the date we put it in place. So it was June of 2014, so we went back to June of 2013.
Right. For a handful of months, yeah.
Okay. So then, am I hearing, maybe I'm reading between the lines, but so this year, in 2015, our 10% reduction is going to the 14 rate. The 14 usage, not the 13 usage, should be the 13 usage, correct?
So the baseline would continue to be the same. It would be June through December of 13, okay. And up till May of 2014.
FY 14.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha.
Which is fiscal year 14, right?
Right. So then that leads to my question of so how many people have you said that we've got a very small number of people that have gotten to the 100% or the first round of penalties. So how many people have gotten of that percentage have gotten to the 200 or the 300? So basically indicating that there's just no way for them to conserve the water either. And my next question is going to be, have they represented that they've already done the conservation internally, changed all the fixtures, and what do we do if that happens? Like,
that's a couple questions. So 0.2% have made it to the third penalty. So the number's tiny. No, we're not generally finding that that they have made water conservation efforts or that they've shown that they've changed fixtures or changed habits. In several of the cases, what we're actually finding is that they've just simply elected not to. So there's been some effort on some of those, and I think it's a mixture. I think the good part, though, is that we do have a water conservation specialist, and he is working with anyone that's either been penalized or is about to be penalized in trying to assist them in meeting the requirements and detailing what I call the low-hanging fruit, the easy ones, the toilet retrofits, the reduction in irrigation and things like that. So,
thank you for allowing me to ask all those questions. I will have some comments later with regards to the last page of the report was with regards okay. to fees and revenues and so forth, and then also if I don't know if we want to have a conversation back and forth with regards to how apartments are handled and so forth.
Yeah, I think when we come back and have the discussion, that can be one of the topics. So I think you've asked most of my questions, so that's a good thing about going last. But I do want to go down this road of, we talked about program success being due to the efforts of the community, the people, and the businesses. I just want to make the distinction, though, because I know you said the program's been successful. And do we have a direct correlation of having the penalties in there is one of the reasons that we've been so successful, meaning has it been more the carrot than the stick? It's what I'm trying to get at is we can say we've been successful, and you talk about the whole program, but I want to look at the issue of the penalties in particular. Do we have evidence that says because the penalties were there, this is why people have changed their habits and upgraded their conservation techniques?
Well, yeah, thank you, City Attorney. I think we do. We know that cities, our neighboring cities, have undertaken a very aggressive media campaign to reduce water consumption and have not instigated penalties. And we know that at least one of the other cities is now moving toward penalties, specifically because their program is not producing the results that our program is producing. Can I say that I know for a fact it's the penalties and that it's nothing else? It would be very difficult to draw that conclusion conclusively, but I think that is the difference, and we are almost twice as successful. It certainly must be at least partly in due to the penalty.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's part of it. I think the other part of it, if you want to do a straight comparison, we're River Beach with smaller lots, probably smaller landscape areas, and so I'm not going to belabor that point. Where I want to go with this, though, is while we talk about percentages, 2.4% of customers have reached the first penalty, 1.8% the second, and 0.2% the third, and I know when we use percentages, it makes it seem like a small group, so maybe I want to know who are these customers or what types of uses are reaching this penalty phase. And this kind of goes to the issue of establishing a baseline. And I know you talked about treating everyone evenly and fairly, but not everyone has the same behavior. I think we've had some folks who've been doing conservation for years and their baseline was established really low and it was tough for them to get below 10%. So I want to really dive into this when the time comes so that we can make sure what we are doing is in fact fair and equitable. So who is it? Apartments? Is it businesses? Is it shopping centers? I mean, who are the folks that you've at least identified so far that have gotten to this stage?
The large users that have been unable to meet the 10% reduction requirement have been a very small handful of businesses. I can think of four or five.
Okay. You don't have to name them.
But some significantly sizable businesses that do a lot of business. And in our outreach and education efforts with them, it's been very easy to identify opportunities,
okay.
I'll say. By and large, it's been residents, by and large. Primarily landscaping or some plumbing feature within the house that's either a leak that hasn't been repaired. And we're finding, you know, it's interesting you speak to the penalties. So we're finding we put out the courtesy notice and said, hey, you didn't meet the 10% requirement. And this is with regard to residences mostly. Really no contact, nothing really happened. We put out the second letter saying, you know, boy, this is 2 months later and you still aren't meeting the 10% reduction requirement. We finally end up putting out the warning letter that says, the penalty letter that says, well, you're going to get penalized. And we get the phone calls pretty quickly at that point. And in a lot of cases, what we're finding out is that our water conservation specialist goes through the outreach education process, talks to the customer about their water use, and it turns out they've had several leaking fixtures, a landscape irrigation leak, and they've done nothing for 6 months. So it's really interesting to see, you know, with the vast majority of people are just diving on board with this program, and some people are just waiting until somebody says, well, you're going to get penalized, and then they start asking around, well, what could it possibly be? And you find out there's been a leak for 6 months by this time. That's the residential side of it. Okay. And then with regard to apartment buildings, it's a mix. We find that some apartment buildings are able to comply and others just haven't been. So.
Okay. And then how many residents and business owners have, in fact, been provided the education? I know this report keeps saying these things are huge successes, but not quantifying them for. So what's the number? Do we know?
Off the top of my head, I don't. I should have probably brought that detail, but virtually every single person that's received a warning notice has had public outreach and education opportunities, and I would venture to say that at least 95% of the people that received the second notice have also received educational and outreach opportunities through our water conservation specialists.
Okay, so there may be some opportunity to give education to folks who haven't received the penalty. And I think one of our speakers talked about something like that earlier. So maybe, you know, staff, if you can take that down and when we come back, provide that information. I'm not sure how far we're going to go tonight, especially since we are missing two council members. But this is really good information for the folks who are here and who are tuning in to get an idea of where we are with respect to water. I think you asked a question there, Jeff. So let me clarify demand. So you were basically talking about we're at 76 gallons per capita per day. So that's basically per person?
That's correct.
In the community. Okay. So that's something I have to think about. Obviously, it's different for a single occupant household versus a family of four. So, all right. And then what is the build-out population? I know that in the report it talked about if looking at things as they stand today, that there's a sufficient supply to accommodate the build-out population. Do we know what that number is? And if there's a number for commercial development as well?
The build-out population, residential population, has been estimated around 15,000. So. I think it's just slightly under that. And that's a 2035 estimate.
Okay.
Whether we hit build out at 2035 or not is uncertain.
Yeah.
That includes density of residential and commercial and industrial to maximum density, essentially.
Okay. So we're at 13,000 today. 15,000 is projected. Okay. Let's see. What else? So I was going to ask a question about benchmarking, but it certainly seems to be that Grover Beach is becoming the gold standard for whatever reason. But I do think we need to talk about, are there some adjustments? This is what good planning looks like. You put a plan in effect, you give it some time to be implemented, and then obviously you get some feedback. Because I know that, as you talked about, there's some situations where people have been given waivers. And I know that I've been talking to a lot of folks who said, hey, I've been doing a lot of conserving and my water usage is less than 25 gallons a day or something like that. I mean, so how are we treating users like that out in the community, Paul?
Low-level users, and those that are 10 or below, 10 units or below during a billing process, we have not been notifying them one way or the other, because under 10 units, it's just it's mathematically impossible actually to get a real effective 10% reduction and have it be meaningful.
So for the folks in the audience or at home, can you clarify 10 units, put it in layman's terms for everyone?
I'll try to. 10 units. Each unit is worth 750 gallons, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, 750 times 10 is roughly, what is that, 7,500 gallons in a two-month period of time.
Great. Very well done. Thank you.
So if I could add to that a little bit, you know, that as the city manager mentioned, that a water meter would not have the instantaneous numerical accuracy to be able to know on any given billing period. It jumps by a whole units. So if you were under 10 units and you jumped the whole unit, it could average that. It either jumps all the way or it's not quite there if you're 9/10. So you wouldn't know in any given month which side of the line you're on. And then up to, you know, we're using a targeted approach because this program is very costly in terms of time and staff resources. And so the targeted approach, we're really focusing on the larger users. So the smaller users, you know, and the average around in the city is around 25 units in a two-month billing period. We're not focusing our efforts on them. We're focusing our efforts on users well over the 25 unit range.
Great, thank you. I think those are all of my questions. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and open this up to the public and see if anyone that wants to come up and make comments on the item before the council. Is there anyone that would like to come forward? Please state your name for the record.
Ken Lehman, and thank you very much. You educated me quite well. Thank you. I'd like to show you these. I didn't give you these earlier on state water, if you don't mind.
Not at all. Are those copies for us?
Well, you just have to share them.
Oh.
This is the one on the drinking
water.
Okay. That one's really modern.
I need you to talk at the podium, but kind of. That's
and
okay.
And this is a construction site that I saw the other day pumping right out of the hydrant.
So Ken, I need you to restate your name again.
Ken Lehman.
Thank you, Ken.
And concerned about the water, of course, and trying to do the best I can. But like I said, people are doing a lot better than me. 10 units or under, that's amazing. I mean, I'm taking a shower now in a tub, taking the water and throwing it out. So that girl or my neighbor is under 10. So it's amazing. These people are really trying. And then I see this, the state. Open up a tap. I want to know, does that come from our groundwater? Is that our groundwater, the state water that's being used by the campers? Because I didn't see anybody, no control. You can turn it on. Does the city planner know? The state.
Mr. Mayor, I'll address this question. I think if Mr. Lehman is not mistaken, when you brought this to my attention before, we were talking about the sanitation dump station, is that correct?
Yeah, but there's, as seen on the picture, there's drinking taps. There's two.
Yes. First of all, in order to work with us, yes, Mr. Mayor.
So hang on. Before you do that, I don't want to have a back and forth.
Sure. Oh, no,
so,
I don't either. I just,
Mr. Lehman, is that the only question that you
have?
Well,
the other one is I had a neighbor call
on
the new construction. We're talking about water shortage, and yet we're building. I mean, doesn't make sense. No moratoriums. But we're building because it does finance, it does bring in money for our city, which is good. But the residents really are trying, as you can see. And businesses and everybody else needs to be a little responsible also, and including the state. If they're, until I get cleared, is that water being used?
Okay.
I mean, and the other picture I showed you, now this is secondhand, so it was taken from the hydrant and being flushed the dirt area at a new construction site, and I think it's 45 new homes. So, and it was leaking. I mean, we're all asked to conserve, but I don't know if there's a meter on that hydrant or why are some asked to conserve why others aren't. It's kind of like, you know, in the past, we've been told this for years, diet of a small planet. Back in the 60s, 70s, watch it, this stuff's coming. And then Al Gore, Peace Prize, gets a Peace Prize
for conservation, and yet we find out he has enough electricity for a city block. Do as I say, but don't do as I do. We got it. This water intrusion, like he's saying it, if we get salt water in it, we'd like Cambria. I talked to a gentleman yesterday, Cambria. They came to start that thing up because there's problems with it. That's a direction we could go. In Avalor or something, make a desalinization, because in the future, I love this community and so do you. We need water. And
thank
we need
you,
to take this serious. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lehman. Is there anyone else?
Brad Snook, co-chair for our county's chapter of Surf Rider Foundation. The issue with desalination is that for every 2 gallons you take in of open intake seawater, you have 1 gallon of waste. So it becomes a problem. What do you do with that waste? It's nasty brine stuff. And we already have an issue of what we do with the brine that goes that comes into people's water softener. So it's a discharge. It's an environmental impact. The problem that we have is that we throw too much water away. So as part of the conservation efforts, people are either using less water from the start, or they're finding ways around their household to reuse the water that they have. Okay, so gray water reuse is one thing you can do. As far as the businesses and designing plans for management, I think that's a great way to get these businesses to start thinking about how they impact the community and come up with great ideas and bring them to the council and say, this is what we did, and you can celebrate with them to tell them how great they are for conserving a shared resource in the community. The farm water management plan is something that Regional Water Quality worked with on the farm waiver and ag waiver issue. I wanted to give the mayor credit for his work with the sanitation district. We have yet another study coming up as far as the feasibility of water reclamation. But the district has seen study and study and study after study without any real impact. So we're looking for a real motion forward. As far as PISMO's plan goes, they're taking a motion forward, but they're only going to get about 30% of their discharge out of their first phase, out of the first stage of their plan. So that means of the 3.8 million gallons a day that these communities right here discharge into the ocean, 3.8 million gallons a day, that'll, with 30% of PISMO's discharge, is only 300,000 gallons. So there's still a huge, huge amount that we just throw away. So turn your back on desal. It's way too costly. It's way too much of an impact. Let's consider reclamation. Let's make that study work for us. And so when people come out to the sanitation district meetings, there's a lot of really good stuff going on there. And I invite everybody to come out. Also about the plan, it's useful for people to look at their water usage in terms of gallons and not so much percentage, because year after year we're going to have kind of a statistics game, and it's going to be hard for people to track. But if you just say you need to reduce your consumption by 10 gallons per day, they know what that means. So let's just break it down into gallons instead of percentages if you can, when you can. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Okay, is there anyone else?
Good evening. My name is Doug Morrow. I've been a resident of Grover Beach since 1988 with my family. We are now a family of four, and we're one of those common small folk that don't use a lot of water and have tried our best to reduce our amount we use, using the gray water, standing in the morning with a bucket, holding all the water that comes out cold and using that to flush with. There's, you know, lots of tricks. And we've been very successful over the long haul, over the cutback months since the June of 2013. we are under 30%. We have saved more than 30%, though we have two notices. Okay, we have two notices that came. One was rescinded after three or four emailings back and forth, and I appreciate the give and take. So my concern would be how you are factoring in for the common folk how much water they're using. On your website, the city's website, it shows the meter with tenths and hundredths. But yes, they don't use that in, and I don't know the function of it. He says it kicks over automatically. But when they factor in amount used, there are whole units. Case in point, this last billing period, the last 2 months, we were down. The year before, we had 12 units for my four-member family, and we cut it down to 11. Well, from the 12 units, they don't do 1.2, which is 10%. They did two units, okay, which is really 16.6666%. Okay, and so we got a notice. My suggestion would be either to use, and I hope I didn't lose you there. It's just that when you don't use tenths to factor in penalties or deciding penalties, what they ended up doing is rounding up from 1.2 to 2. 1.2 to 2, and we all know in math, at least, is not a good thing to do. So my suggestion would be to look at multi-months, okay? Particularly for most families, I may have a lot of people come in, you know, and we're all like that. There are certain months you may have all your birthdays, all your whatever, the holiday months. You have a lot of people come in. You use more water. Maybe you couldn't save then, but over 3 or 4 months, you're under the 10%. So instead of nailing, especially the common folk, for simple 1 month being over compared to 1 month the year before, look at how much they are saving. And again, I think if the meters could be used with tenths, it could be as fine for that. But I think the multi-month suggestion might be good. Anyway, thank you for your time, and I enjoy the venue of letting us be heard.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. We appreciate you taking the time to come out. Okay, I believe there was a letter from Mr. Weisong.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I'll go ahead and read that into the record. The letter is to the Honorable Mayor and City Council members. Our governor has asked us to reduce water usage by 25% to 28% from 2013 baseline water figures. Watering schedules are being implemented, and every effort is being made to stress the importance of these reductions. But many cities in California have asked for only a 10 to 12% reduction, such as San Luis Obispo, Arroyo Grande, and Grover Beach. And Arroyo Grande is asking for reductions based on a 2014 baseline uses. This problem of non-uniform water reduction requirements is causing a problem throughout the state and in many cities and counties. In order to fairly ask residents to reduce water usage, a proper water reduction proposal that is not open-ended and confusing in its wording and implementation needs to be presented. For example, what is not being properly addressed in the city of Grover Beach is the issue of putting into place a temporary building moratorium. The city of Grover Beach needs to have a mandatory building moratorium similar to what was put into effect in the 1990s. Why has this not been considered? This should include all new construction, including the two new hotels for Grover Beach. It has been documented that an average male uses 28 gallons of water a day, and a female uses 36 gallons a day while staying in a hotel. It is irresponsible and short-sighted to continue with these projects when there is a very real long-term water availability concern. What about setting a baseline use
that is determined by the number of persons in a household. Why does Grover Beach not have an outdoor watering guideline with watering restrictions for households and businesses? How about penalties and cost increases for Tier 2 and higher water users only? Why is our water treatment plant in Oceano failing to treat the wastewater so that it can be used to recharge our groundwater instead of dumping it in the ocean? Why are we not encouraging the use of gray water? We can no longer ignore our water crisis. The city of Grover Beach needs to make very difficult and unpopular decisions, decisions that are fair to all and do not make the local residents suffer for the pie in the sky that the city has been trying for so long to grab. Constructive criticism never hurt anyone. It is the truth that hurts. John A. Wysong, 1660 Brighton Avenue, Grover Beach, California.
Thank you, Bob. And with that, I'm going to close the item to the public. And, Bob, I think now would be appropriate for you to respond to Mr. Lehman. I think he had asked a question and you started responding to him.
Yes. In fact, I do believe the park, they are a user of our municipal system. There are some portions of the park that use well water that are not within our control. I believe the golf course is one of those, if I'm not mistaken. But the sanitation area, as well as the restrooms, are on our municipal water. I believe they received one notice. In reaction to that notice, they did a couple of things. One, for a while, for the water shower and drinking fountains immediately outside of the restroom, they actually cut that water off for a portion of the year. And secondly, in terms of the sanitation district, they have instituted a locking system. It used to be that system was available, if I'm not mistaken, 24/7 pretty much. But they have the gates. The gates are locked from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. in the morning. The water is also turned off during that period of time. There's a sign immediately posted regarding the state requirements to conserve water, and the water is necessary to be left on there, though, because there is some sanitation issues according to, you know, cleaning out their RV systems, etc., and that's why the water is left on during that period of time.
Okay. You have any something?
I was just going to ask if staff wanted to respond to the call. A couple people mentioned why are we still building with regard to moratoriums, and I was wondering if Greg could mention the new fixture requirements that with new building codes and so forth that people have in order to effectively build in water conservation to projects as they come forward.
I can. There are two important facts that affect building and the thought of a building moratorium. One is that it is believed that this is a short-term condition, and under normal conditions, the city does have adequate supply. As I mentioned, and the mayor was asking about the build-out population, now that includes the estimation of additional hotels, additional businesses, additional industrial development that could be water using. So all that has been factored in the city's urban water management plan, which actually discusses the intensification of development within the city and the ultimate water use. This is a short-term supply problem, and staff and council have discussed at previous meetings some of the thoughts relative to an additional source of water to address short-term supply issues. Relative then to new development in particular, new development is subject to a number of rules. one of them being relative to outdoor irrigation. They're subject to the water conserving landscape model ordinance. I'm sure I have the name wrong, but it's basically an ordinance developed by the state that the city has adopted, which requires all new development to have very well-engineered outdoor irrigation systems and very drought-tolerant, and they're allowed a certain amount of water use, which is very low. And you'll see some of that actually being implemented on the very tract that was whose map was approved earlier. With regard to hotels and any new commercial, the same rules would apply. And so for interior use, the California Plumbing Code requires that all new fixtures interior be water conserving. That would include appliances, fixtures, runs the whole gamut. So new homes are amazingly efficient on water.
Okay. All right. So let's have some discussion and see if we can give staff some direction. So, Greg, what's on the screen is those are the options you were identifying for the council to consider at this point and give some direction on.
Yeah, we basically, through implementation of the program, had identified and in discussing with other cities and looking at what has been successful to some extent. We'd identified these five, and I'm kind of flipping back and forth, hopefully, so you can see all of them. But, thought that maybe we could go to an administrative citation versus the consumption penalty. The thought that maybe businesses aren't a significant water use. They're 18% of the annual water use. Could consider eliminating the application of the requirements. Or jumping back to mandatory water conservation training as a first option versus a first penalty. Establishing okay. Modified baseline water use. I believe Mr. Weissong brought that up about a baseline based on people, and in particular in with regard to apartments, that appears to maybe be relevant. And then talking about businesses maybe implementing a water conservation plan, which would show that to the extent practicable, they've implemented all water conserving devices and practices.
Okay, so then let's just use those five as an outline for us to go ahead and have a conversation and see if we have some consensus. So let's go to the top. We've got mandatory water conservation training for residents or businesses requesting waivers. That different than what we're doing now? Is that what you're?
It is.
So it's not mandatory.
You through our water conservation specialist, we are providing quite a bit of information. We have both on the website and in paper hard copy information on fixtures and practices and the effect of all those. How much water it is estimated each of them could conserve. So. It's very easy to look at that and figure out if I need to conserve this much. Here's the really easy ones. So we're dispensing information through public outreach. But this is a program implemented by Santa Cruz where they, if you get to the point of having a penalty and you don't want to pay the penalty and you request a waiver, they could issue a one-time waiver if you attend a class. And it's a several-hour class on water conservation. And I would note that the city of Rio Grande is contemplating okay. the same thing.
Very good. So are you okay with the first one?
So is that like traffic school for water?
yes. Yes, it would be.
We would not have a comedy traffic school, though.
Right.
Yes. Okay.
So now I'm supportive of that with just kind of an add-on potential.
Okay.
For that.
What's your add-on?
If is the training also available in a video format? From the standpoint of, yes, mandatory training for residents who are over their allocation, but would it not also be possible to put it onto Channel 21 and kind of run it in a recurring training along with their other programming? So
maybe we should just say we like that, and then, what we would want to do is, and I don't know if it's another number, but to expand training for anyone that's interested. I think that's really where you're trying to go with this, correct?
Exactly, yeah.
And I know we're doing a lot now, but I think we need to redouble our efforts, mm-hmm. okay? Because, we, like I said, the residents and business owners have been really responsive, so that's good. So let's move down to number two, establishing a modified baseline water use for apartment buildings. And quite honestly, I think that is definitely something worth investigating or exploring. I would also add that I think we should expand that to be whether it's a business or commercial. So here's my concern, that the baseline period was probably during a time of a recession and business was down. And then you might have a restaurant or, let's say, a shopping center that's got some additional users that have come in. It's really hard to establish where the baseline is. And the last thing we want to do is start discouraging businesses as well as residents. So I would think apartment buildings, businesses, and then I have another piece talking about the residential part of this, but at least for now, modify baseline for you. For water use for apartment buildings. I know, Jeff, you had a question or some comments on that.
Yeah, and going along those same lines, it's along the thought of, okay, if we establish the number of people that are in the apartments, and then that changes and so forth, is there a portion of the program where, and I talked with the city manager a little bit about this today, not sure how it would get implemented, but if on an annual basis the apartments say, I have this many units, this many people, and then they update that, which then goes into a kind of a water formula mm-hmm. from that perspective. The thought that I had that maybe may not fit into that is some of the, maybe it's a majority, I'm not sure how many, of the apartments don't have sub-meters. And so they internally, as Greg mentioned, that they won't know how many people mm-hmm. or who's not conserving. Where one resident goes, I'm going to conserve,
hey, doctor, right.
And the next person next door goes, oh, my neighbor's conserving, I don't have to conserve. So I don't know if there's any SBA loans or any programs that that are out there that may be able to help those owners to put in submeters or to replumb to provide them with that information that they can then use to do that. Because I don't think it's a city program, unfortunately. I don't think we've got the resources to do that. But I've been informed that some apartment owners are saying, okay, you have four people or six people in your unit, you use too much water, I'm going to evict you in the appropriate fashion and only rent to two people. So therefore, their water use goes down, which I don't think we want to encourage that.
Okay. So that all you have? Mayor?
I mean, I really do like the idea of having a modified baseline for apartment users, but the point Jeff brought up is the devil's always in the details, and Jeff's on it, so I'm not sure how we deal with that.
Well, I think if we just have a consensus to give staff direction to research this and come back later, I think we can have a much more in-depth conversation, because I can tell you the planner in me says the difference between having an apartment with only one meter and then having everyone have a meter is called a condominium. So I think there is some conversation we should have with respect to it. And it's the same thing as with a shopping center. And I don't know if this happens very often, but there are some shopping centers that only have one meter for five businesses. And so how do you rectify, how do you set a baseline for that? So I think, I think the program as it was adopted was very effective. I mean, it was a very simple version, and we picked a point in time and compared everything to that. And I get that. And I think on the average that works. But when we have residents and businesses and others that are a little more customizing that, I think this gets to that whole point of not wanting to penalize people that have gone the extra mile before we even entered this. So I think I'm okay with saying let's modify baseline for apartments, and then let's take a look at some of the I guess it's commercial or businesses. So okay.
I'm agreement with that as well. From a commercial standpoint, and Greg, maybe you can let me know, how many landscape meters are in town? I mean, do any of the shopping centers have landscape meters?
Yes, there are a very small number of landscape meters. It's not a significant number of meters in terms of percentage, but it does account for at least a notable amount of water. It's in the 10% range of total water uses through landscape meters. So, that is those are being monitored also, and there's obviously a lot more opportunity to conserve on those meters. If Mayor, okay. if I might, sure. relative to the previous item, if it helps.
Which previous item?
The idea of establishing a modified baseline.
Uh-huh.
So if you look at the percentages of people who are complying versus not, and I say customers who are complying and not complying, the number that are not in compliance is very small. And as Councilmember Shaw mentioned, and I believe also Councilmember Lee, that one of the challenges with establishing the number of people is that how do you maintain that database and how current and accurate is it? It's not that difficult with the small number of people who are not in compliance to work with them to establish a modified baseline. However, if you apply that across the board, it becomes a much larger question. We're dealing with roughly 2-3% of people today, or customers today, applying that to 100%, or whatever percentage would be apartment buildings, say 10 or 15% possibly of customers. It's a much larger data collection and maintaining error problem rather.
So you're saying it might be best to wait until people are getting a notice and work with those apartment buildings that are actually getting right. notices, because the other ones are okay and we don't want to over collect.
In compliance, right. Don't create a problem if it doesn't exist, I guess is the point.
I think we all agree with that. And so I think that's maybe something you can explain in a report rather than tonight. I think we want to look at these things, see if it makes sense, and see if it can, because we certainly don't want to make a program worse. But we do think there is some validity. When the Morals come here and they talk about their situation, and I've heard several stories similar to that. So we want to be responsive and figure out if there's a way we can tweak it. And that was kind of brings me to my next point that he had brought up about looking at multiple months versus 1 month, and so what does that entail? I don't think that you need to answer that tonight, but I do believe there's validity in that. And in particular, I've heard people talk about, hey, there's four people in my household. I have a college student who goes away, and then they come back either over during the summer break or the holidays, and the water usage goes up, and then they get penalized for that. So how do we address that and reconcile that, So I think it's valid, and we just need to figure out how we can make some tweaks to address some of those situations. And if it is meaning going through the waiver process and to just say a waiver, or if it's hey, just a warning, let's come in and let's chat. And if you've done everything good, if not, then here's some other suggestions. But we need to figure out how do we make some refinements, I would think.
And along those same lines, not wanting to get down into the weeds, but our water conservation specialist, it sounds like he's doing as much of that as he can with people who will come talk to him. But the issue might be is people who don't receive the notice and then reach out to the city. We've done all the outreach that we can. Mm-hmm. So just kind of strengthening that outreach and tweaking the program to make it be as efficient as we can.
Right. I don't know if we're jumping, because I know we were going to go down the list, but if we're talking about just establishing baselines in general, especially for people like the Moros and people who are already conserving, I mean, it might really be worth, when these notices start going out, not really hard and fast adhering to 10 units. I mean, if someone's at 12 or someone's at 15, maybe we really need to take a harder look at their situation. And if they're doing everything they can do, I mean, that's still pretty low depending on the number of people they have in their house.
If I can comment on that, yes. I think you'll find that we're not spending a lot of time. We're not focusing a lot of effort on anybody that's, in that range. Even if they conserve an additional unit, that water savings compared to the higher users is not significant. So we're really focusing on the much higher water uses, well into the 30s to the hundreds.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
Councilmember Shaw's point is well taken, and we'll review the courtesy noticing procedures and provide some recommendations regarding those as well.
That'd be great. Thank you. Okay. So then let's move down to number three. I didn't want to let, so this multiple, the idea of the multiple months, I would think, let's at least get more information on that and see.
And maybe a question, it almost sounds like we're informally doing that on some occasions, and I don't want to single out Mr. Morrow, but and I'm not sure when his last notice was, but I'm wondering if the either the second time there was a review of the last several months, and staff could have said, or maybe they did, that this met the intent, mm-hmm. and staff is using their good judgment to do that. It sounds like maybe just in the report back to us to just kind of formalize that, or maybe more formal, or.
And I think you're right, Bob. Let's take a look at the noticing process, because I've had many people come and drop the notice off at my house. So, and I know it was well intentioned. I'm not pointing fingers or anything like that. So I just, you know, let's be responsive and let's at least take a look at it. Okay. So then number three, removing the mandatory conservation requirement for businesses that submit a water conservation plan. And I thought we had someone come up and say they thought that was a good idea. What about you guys?
I think it's a good idea. I just, I don't know if we should remove, excuse me, the conservation requirement entirely. I would think maybe they should still have to check back in. You know, someone should have to go to the property every mm-hmm. 3 months or 6 months to make sure they're continuing on, and I don't think that should be a blank check to use water.
Yeah, agreed. Yep. But this is something that's heading in the right direction. We certainly want to make sure everybody is doing their fair share, and businesses included. So, but I do believe this is heading in the right direction. Okay. Well, we'll let him finish with his note, and maybe we can move us to item four and five. Okay. Changing the appendix to an administrative citation. You had talked about this. There's something already in the municipal code on this one.
So, for example, if you violated the municipal code provision for property maintenance, say, or parking of an inoperable vehicle or something, on first notice, you'd receive a violation letter and then you'd receive a citation on second notice, and the citation could carry a penalty, and I believe it's $100. And then if you continued to violate on second violation, you'd receive a notice and a penalty of roughly $200, I believe. And I think it escalates up to maybe as much as $500 over multiple penalties. This is something that some other agencies have contemplated, and I believe that's the way that the some adjoining cities would be implementing their program if they move to it. Would be to just assess a flat penalty versus ours, which is a rather large if you're a larger consumer. And, you know, you may rightfully be a larger consumer and miss the 10% requirement, and you'd have a very large penalty.
Thoughts?
I would be in favor of that. For example, I know I've spoken to one apartment owner that, at least for now, they just can't do it. And they can't figure it out, and they're trying, but they're getting huge. I mean, if you own a whole apartment, your water bill's in the thousands, and then you triple it, and that's kind of above and beyond maybe what we're trying to do.
Okay.
Or maybe there's someone who, you know, they just can't afford to redo that plumbing, and maybe they would be willing to just pay the citation, but triple your water bill, that's a lot of money, so I don't know.
Okay. Jeff?
And I was along the lines of what Councilmember Shaw was saying. Sometimes they just can't pay that, but would it be possible to offer a program to where instead of paying the penalty, if we do stay with those penalties, that we offer them the incentive of fixing fixtures or reducing fixtures with that penalty, so that rather than the city just getting funding for that, it actually becomes do they change the irrigation with that and provide us receipts and so forth that says I've paid a minimum of that amount, and that hopefully then becomes water conserving from that perspective. I don't know if that becomes a difficult program to monitor. It's basically another aspect of a cash for grass.
It's similar.
Yeah, it sounds like that would dovetail nicely with this idea of a water conservation program. So if an apartment building, say, would have been penalized a certain amount, and they provide a water conservation program that says, we'll make the following fixture changes, and we say, you know, you need to at least do that up to the amount of what your penalty would have been over this mm-hmm. period of time or something like that. I think with the current staff resources and, again, the few number of people that are in noncompliance, I think that's something that would be reasonable to consider.
Okay. Then I think that's a good direction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. So then the number five is, I think we've all said we want everyone to do their fair share. So I guess we've already, by de facto, said we're not going to move forward with number five, correct?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, the reason we're doing so well with this is the penalty. It made us stand up and take notice and actually look at our bill, so I think that might be a little too much.
Wow. Maybe I'm just the optimistic guy. I think it's really more people taking that responsibility seriously and doing that reduction. And, yeah, I know there's a few that say, fine me and I'll do whatever, but, you know, I want to hold on to the belief that people are being conscientious and moving forward and doing a lot of these conservations. I can tell in my neighborhood and adjacent neighborhoods, folks are really stepping up and doing the right thing and helping out where they can. So.
And I think on some level, we were slightly ahead of the curve, and so we got some good traction from people kind of conserving first and foremost. And so I think by what we're doing here tonight, we're kind of reducing the possibility for conservation fatigue as well. I mean, we're encouraging and being very supportive of the community to continue conserving. But at some point, we don't want to, in my opinion, make it so onerous that people go, I don't care anymore. I'm just going to use water. So, and I think we've got a fairly nice blend.
Yeah. So I think we've given some pretty good direction. Bob or Greg, are you guys clear on that?
I believe so.
I think the one thing I did want to, last thing I wanted to say is that we do take water conservation very seriously. And I know that we actually have several meetings set up with representatives from Arroyo Grande, Pismo Beach, and Oceano to talk about not just short-term but long-term water planning and ways that we can all partner with reclamation. And I think Mr. Snook talked about what South County Sanitation District is doing. And so, Jeff, you're exactly right. I know Grover was one of the first ones to move toward conservation and water saving many, many years ago before any of us was even on this council. So we have been moving in that direction. So use of gray water and reclaimed water, those are all values and things that we want to promote, and I think as time goes, we're going to have more discussion on those. And so we'll continue to monitor the situation. We'll continue to monitor the drought. I know some people have used the moratorium word here tonight. And so we're going to make sure that we do everything possible to ensure that we have short-term and long-term supply of water. And if we get to those dire circumstances, we can certainly have that as an option to us at some point in the future. But I think for now, the results are speaking in a very positive manner. Miriam?
Oh, before we wrap up, I wanted to mention one thing about the gray water that maybe we could look at. I know financially so many people have already taken advantage of our cash for grass and other type things, but maybe we could look at some sort of similar incentives for installing a gray water system at your home. And also, I'm not sure the makeup of people who are being fined, but it sounds like we're not going heavily after certain residential users that are already using a low amount. But we may also want to, just in our leeway, give some special consideration to seniors or people who maybe they can't redo their grass, or maybe they can't afford a new washing machine. And maybe if someone's a senior citizen, that should also be taken into account, like in your meetings. And I also wanted to just talk about the building moratorium, because I work, I'm one of the committees I'm on is the Affordable Housing Committee here. So it's a struggle because actually we don't have housing for people here, but we also, I actually came here from a suburb that completely sprawled, so I understand that, and that's the last thing that I want. But I do want to point out, at least in the last couple of years, we've actually lost residents of Grover Beach. We're not trying to build, I don't think, to make this a huge place. I know personally I don't want that. I can't speak for everyone. But we do want to keep the families that we have here and let them have an affordable place to live. So it's a balance. It's a difficult one, but I want you to know we do think about that.
Okay. Okay. You have anything?
Two things, if I might. Realizing that we're in year either three or four, depending upon how you count from the start of the drought, and maybe staff and the city manager can talk about we're doing very good at the moment with our conservation and so forth, but Greg represented in his staff report that if we continue, there's additional things that may be necessary. So now, just to kind of discuss what happens if we're in the same situation next year. I mean, obviously we're in a stage three, effectively severe mandatory. Stage four in our own situation is critical mandatory. Obviously we are going to have all sorts of rain dances and appropriate mechanisms to make it rain, hopefully, on some level. But let's say it doesn't rain. Are we having the same conversation in December? Or are we having this conversation in May? Or are we having it in when should we come back with a next phase if nothing happens?
Mr. Mayor, if I okay. could, we focused as a background report. We're going to need to come back to you probably before the end of the summer, not only to adjust the implementation of the penalties per your direction, but we're also going to need to again review the status of the water situation and ask you to make a decision as to whether you're going to want to move to a phase four or not. That is something that takes place annually.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
And then the second aspect of that has something potentially how we do our budget discussions next week. So at the last page, as I mentioned, is methods for analysis of impact of revenues and expenditures. So I know we've provided direction to implement a utility rate study as part of the budget process if it moves forward. One of the thoughts that I was thinking of is a discussion on how much, how do I say it correctly? Discussion of water rates, how they're implemented, how they're calculated, and if we establish a base rate for water production and then add the water usage. And I don't know, it may not be an appropriate time to do it tonight, but or we do it next week.
Yeah, I think we do it next week, but I will say, just to clarify, I know staff had come and asked for the council direction to move forward with the rate study. That doesn't mean that the rates are going to go up. It means we're going to take a look at them. And I know that there was a recent ruling for the city. Was that San Juan Capistrano? What city was that? Was it regarding tiered water rates? And we do have tiered water rates, so we have asked to take a look at what that impact right. is to Grover Beach. So I think that's what we'll do, and we'll have a lot more discussion on that. Sounds good. Okay. So I think. At this point, I want to thank everyone who came down and made comments. We want to encourage anyone that's out in the community who've watched this but haven't had a chance to come forward to make sure you give the staff a call if you have questions, and then we'll make sure we continue putting out a notice. And when we have a date for the next discussion, Bob, I think we'll make sure that's properly noticed so we can get folks to come back out. Okay? I think with that, we are adjourned at 7:39.